Man, this aircon is racist.
I've never ever been a spy.
Can the VBS bank loot?
The problem is that Pinky.
I'll never subject myself to whiteness.
I'm listening.
Can you have consistency, Honorable Chair?
Corruption was an Olympic sport. They will always win gold.
This is not a shit.
At arms, can you please come
on the
in?
Point of order.
Welcome to the Sunday Times Politics Weekly Podcast. We are back with another nail-biting episode. In the past 2 weeks, we have seen accusations flying high, parliament drama, parties storming out and the like. In today's podcast, we are going to talk about the state of the nation and more, specifically how it went south with the accusation of murder.
The president has called for this joint sitting.
On the point of order, Speaker.
Honorable Malema, what is your point of order?
Honorable Speaker, we have a murderer in the house. We have a man who's got blood of innocent people in this house, which is supposed to represent the wills of our people. And therefore, it is incorrect for you to have extended an invitation to the clerk, because the clerk is a murderer. The clerk has got blood on his hands. The people of Buipatum are turning in their graves.
Well, that's right. We're talking about F.W. de Klerk, the last apartheid president. But before we delve deeper into that, we want to remind you to subscribe to our podcast for a free on iona.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your pods casted. If you like our podcast and want to engage with us, chat with us on Twitter using the hashtag STPoliticsWeekly and rate us on your favorite podcast app. I am Zingisa Mvumvu, a political reporter for the Sunday Times, and I'm joined in studio by my two colleagues, Apiwe de Klerk and Mr. Kaifas Khosana. Gentlemen, good day.
Good day.
Good day. Good day.
Yeah, gents, let's get to the elephant in the room, Mr. F.W. de Klerk. I don't know if they are related with this apartheid president, but maybe we have to clear that first. Mr. de Klerk, are you related to Mr. de Klerk?
Don't involve me in those things. Don't involve me.
Anyway, gents, what Abio, let's start with you. I mean, he may be your grandfather for all we know. What is your opinion on the point that was raised by the EFF and the subsequent events that followed, including we know now that Advocate Darimbov has started a non-partisan social movement to get the Nobel Peace Committee to, retract the Nobel Peace Prize that they gave Mr. F.W. de Klerk. What's your view?
Look, this is quite a difficult topic in the sense that from the side of Parliament, he has always been invited in that capacity of former president or former deputy president, because he served with former President Nelson Mandela. So it was quite difficult. Look, maybe someone should have said, in light of this, I mean, do we invite him? Because those, you have to find out when the invite was sent to him. Was the invite sent before he did that interview?
Yeah.
Or was it sent after? I think it was sent before. Because they plan ahead, isn't it, Kaifas?
Yeah, look, they do. My view is kind of different. There are two aspects here.
Yeah.
The invitation to de Klerk.
Mm.
It's a standing invitation to all deputy presidents, former deputy presidents, and former presidents.
Yeah. Yes.
Parliament has to invite them,
mm,
whether people like them or don't like them. Mm. Parliament has to invite them. Where the de Klerk issue becomes a bit problematic,
mm,
is that on the same week that he is invited by Parliament, de Klerk then makes that really illogical and irresponsible statement that apartheid wasn't a crime against humanity.
Yeah. insulting.
But it is extremely insulting. But Canvas,
this is not, yes. if I remember very well, this is not the first time that FWT Clerk has made such, you know.
In fact, you're correct. He has before made problematic statements.
Yes.
In fact,
he's never been this explicit to the extent where
he said it was not a crime against
him. He's denying it.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, you know, the other question that rises was, it correct of the EFF to raise this issue in Parliament in the manner in which they did? And how does raising that issue there advance, you know, the real challenges that are there, inequality, unemployment, and all the other issues that we're dealing with?
You see, I think it was correct for the EFF. They are an opposition party. When you have a platform like that, use it and milk it as much as you want.
Mm-hmm.
The ANC would not have liked that to happen because for them it becomes problematic. It puts them on the spot. They were not as vocal on the matter as they have been post that. Well, it's embarrassing for de Klerk to be there while this thing is being raised. But, I mean, even the speaker on the day allowed it as per the rules.
Mm.
Well, it's inconveniencing a lot of us who have to watch SONA. But, I mean, that's what we want from politicians. Look at it this way. Say it's another matter. Say the president is accused of something. And that's the stage where the majority of South Africans who are interested in politics are watching.
Mm.
So that's where you raise those things. Say the president is on the wrong and we are going to benefit from them raising, like they did with President Jacob Zuma. Subsequently, a lot of people joined that campaign to have him removed. Mm. So, yeah.
For me, what I find unfortunate is that the EFF as a party is always allowed to introduce red herrings whenever there's such important debates. And then we end up chasing after an issue that we should not be chasing after, when, in honest truth, we should be listening to a president tell us about the problems of this country. De Klerk knows, and we all know, that apartheid is a crime against humanity. That is not in dispute. What I want to know is how that debate and that sidetracking is going to help me and help Eskom put the lights on.
Absolutely.
How is it helping Eskom to keep the lights on in this country?
Yeah.
How is that debate helping us to find out what is happening, what is wrong with SAA? How is that debate helping us find out why we have such a high crime rate and how we're going to resolve it? How is it helping us find out what is wrong with our schools and how we're going to fix our schools? What is wrong? Why we have such a depressed economy? Why we have such a high unemployment rate? For me, we end up, you know, allowing the EFF to dictate the debate and introduce all these red herrings when the debate should be about what is in the state of the nation. Can we debate what that president has said in the state of the nation instead of just chasing after one EFF, you know, red herring after another?
Absolutely. Actually, I agree with you, Kavas, because, for instance, now I can bet my last cent, 90% of the people who watched that SONA barely remember what was said in the actual SONA by president. But anyway, let's move into that exactly and deal with the issues that Kavas raised. Let's start with the issue of energy, which is indeed the most important issue at this point in time. The president made a few announcements, but of interest was the announcement that municipalities can now actually source electricity directly from other energy generation companies like the IPPs other than Eskom. What do you guys make out of that particular announcement?
Look, it's an announcement that a lot of people have been waiting for. It will allow municipalities like the city of Johannesburg, like the city of Cape Town, who had been begging for this, to at least go ahead with their plans. I think it's a step in the right direction. It's very frustrating when you run a city like Cape Town, where it's based on tourism, and the lights go off. So now when they can purchase their own power outside of Eskom, even if Eskom is struggling, they are able to keep the lights on. City of Johannesburg is the country's economic capital. You can't afford to have lights off in the city of Johannesburg. It's a very good announcement.
But maybe Kaifas, a question would be, you know, I hear what Apio is saying, especially about the city of Joburg and other metros, which may be capable of doing those things. But how about the general state of dysfunctionality and shambolic financial, you know, books of municipalities? I mean, don't you think that this may actually lead to more bankruptcy? In fact, we do know that, for instance, most of the debt that is due to Eskom is from municipalities. I mean, the city of Joburg, well, in fact, Soweto alone owns billions and billions of rands, and there's many other municipalities. So will these municipalities actually survive financially if we go that route, Kaifas?
In fact, one of the things that Cyril Ramaphosa said, which I found very interesting and very interesting, is he said only municipalities in good standing. Would be allowed to purchase their own electricity from IPPs and other power generators. That's very, very important.
Yeah.
Because remember that not all municipalities can afford to do so.
Yeah.
Right. It's a complex process. It's a very expensive process. You need municipalities that know what they're doing. In many of these municipalities, there isn't enough capacity. There aren't enough skills to actually undertake such a procurement process. But a city like Joburg, a city like Cape Town, would have capacity to do that.
Yeah.
In relation to Soweto, most of that debt is actually owed directly to Eskom.
Yeah.
So it is Eskom that has to deal with that debt.
Yeah.
You know, it has shielded the city of Johannesburg somewhat because they're not directly offering power to Soweto. But still on this issue, what's also very important is the announcement, and I see Gwenaëlle Mantashe also tried to elaborate on it yesterday during the debate into SONA. Is that they are also going to allow private individuals, right, to generate their own electricity.
Like mines, as
they're Mandashi also going said. Also going to allow businesses like mines.
Yeah.
Which it is very disastrous for a mine not to have electricity.
Yo.
Because our economy still relies on exports of raw materials, exports on mining and commodities and resources. And when a mine cannot generate electricity, cannot mine. And when it cannot mine, the economy shuts down. It stops. The mining sector has been saying, we have capacity to generate our own electricity.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, because of whatever it is, policy wrangling, because of bureaucratic indifference, it was very difficult for the mines to do that. But now that avenue is being opened up, let's hope that some of the mines, remember some of these mines, they consume a lot of energy.
Yeah.
Yes. So some of these mines consume so much energy that if they start producing their own energy, it helps us in two ways, right?
Mm.
It frees Eskom from having to constantly supply them electricity, right? So Eskom has, you know, a lot more reserve to work with when it doesn't have to, you know, supply electricity to those, they call them high intensive energy users, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it also then frees the mines to generate their own electricity and keep on operating 24 hours a day, even when Eskom is load shedding. Okay. That way, keeping the economy going.
In actual fact, your point, Kaifas, maybe, it brings me to a point where I would ask, how do these interventions of allowing municipalities, private individuals, companies to generate their own power take off the pressure from Eskom and actually position Eskom to be mainly a producer of electricity for
the likes of you and I.
Yeah, the likes of me and you, you know, and everyone else and the guy on the streets. What is your view on that, Apio? Because there's always been this debate about electricity, that if you allow electricity to be privately generated, there may be issues of affordability for the lower class, if I may put it that way. But now if you only say companies, private individuals who are super rich, who can afford these things, but then Eskom will remain as the main supplier to the ordinary people of this particular country.
Okay. The one thing I wanted to touch on before, Kaifas, is very important to me, is how do you say municipalities that are financially viable?
No, he said that municipalities, the word he used was municipalities that are, did he say financially viable? He didn't say financially viable. He said they're financially sound.
Yeah, then stable.
Sound.
Yeah.
Yes.
You see, they need to be explicit what they mean about sound.
Yes.
They really need to, and it's going to be difficult for some of the municipalities because, I mean, if your books are in order, but your tax base is practically not there, and you feel that maybe my residents are being, you know, disadvantaged by the fact that we can't buy electricity from independent power projects. So they need to be explicit to say when we're saying that we mean a municipality that can collect from residents rates, or we mean a municipality that can spend what we give them in terms of grants and so on. Also, will the government be giving these grants to municipalities like they do for big infrastructure projects like tarring of roads and so on? So I hope going forward they will break it down and explain to us. Coming to what you are saying, yes, I think if you take off that pressure from ESCOM,
yeah,
it's going to be very much beneficial to you and I. Of course, with the announcement that Guedeman Dashe made about another company that they would create to basically compete with ESCOM power generation, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, so basically what they're doing is that they're breaking ESCOM into three,
yeah,
right? Mm. So you're going to have, generation,
transmission,
and distribution. So three different entities, all with their different boards.
Mm.
But what they're going to do is that they're going to allow these ones, especially the transmission companies, to compete and actually sell to clients what they transmit, so they can sell to different clients. And that makes it.
There's this announcement that Guedeman made, and it's from the different the Department of Energy, not from
the public one enterprises. About another ESCOM, so to speak.
Oh, yes, yes, yeah. I know what you're talking about. And that, for me, I found it very laughable. From a government that has run ESCOM to the ground, that
they
you think you can
another
create
ESCOM.
Another ESCOM. you know?
But if Guedeman thinks from his department they can run a better power generation company and sell it to ESCOM,
and
it's going to benefit us.
Sorry.
Maybe I'm trying to imagine a day where people who have historically been in the management of ESCOM are going to go and buy from this new company and not from the company which will be power generation coming out of ESCOM or of the split.
But also, how is
it going to happen?
How is it going to fund the creation of a new power generation company owned by the government? And another SOE,
when they're struggling with the current one,
with the current monopoly that needs to be broken down anyway, because we are in the midst of load shedding because of the monopoly that is ESCOM, and you know the mess that has become of ESCOM. How exactly are they saying that they're going to start another company?
That's what I missed from the SONA, as far as it has to do with energy, ESCOM, and so that. I thought the president was going to then take us through further, or maybe he should have asked Guedeman not to announce this thing of a company and it be him who announces it at the SONA.
Because you see, and that's the other thing, the talking past each other in our government is quite problematic, because even the issue of mines being allowed to generate their own electricity, Guedeman announced it weeks before SONA. It seems like everyone is just doing their own thing. You don't know who's what. ESCOM, this side, it's Mr. Pravin Gordhan. This side is the president. That side is Mr. Guedeman Dashe. So there's also that issue. But before we get low shed and it gets really dark here, let's move on to another issue, appeal. Government is also planning to introduce coding and robotics in grade RN3, so said President Cyril Ramaphosa. Now, really, comrades, first of all, where are the teachers? Secondly, where is the infrastructure?
No, never mind. Is this a new announcement? I've heard this before.
It's not really a new announcement.
No,
it's it's one of those where when I think about it, and I'm like, yeah, we are going into the fourth, we're deep in the fourth industrial revolution, and we need to be catching up with other countries. But the problem with this country is that how do you catch up with other countries when you have such serious backlogs in schools?
In schools. In fact, you don't even have schools in other areas. Where are the teachers?
Some schools don't have electricity.
Exactly.
Some schools don't have the basics, toilets.
You
and
are
libraries.
Going far. In like terms that. Of the physical sciences that is there in the system now, you know, there are issues where there must be experiments in terms of chemical reactions and stuff like that. I did science in a rural school. I had never seen those chemicals, but I don't even know how I passed it. And now they want to move to robotics and coding. Will the kids in the outskirts of KwaZulu-Natal, Eastern Cape, Limpopo, benefit anything from this? In fact, do we have the teachers who are qualified and capable of teaching this? Because we know most of the teachers in our system, seriously, guys, it's even an issue just to teach in English. So, I mean, really, moving to robotics and coding. Abiel, what's your view?
Look, let me be differ with the two of you.
Okay.
I think that the schools where there is infrastructure,
yeah,
start the rollout.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it can be that you disadvantage other pupils because of the backlogs that are there. You see, if there is a school in Soweto that is capable, it must not mean then they can't introduce it there.
But
just because my school, Qokolweni High School, doesn't have the capacity.
Isn't that now empowering the empowered and disadvantaging the disadvantaged?
I wanted rather, to come in there.
Rather few than none.
Expand the gap that already exists.
You see, the problem is that education in the country is run by provinces. And is not run nationally. And this coding will be run by provinces. And some provinces perform better than others. Some provinces have more money than others.
Yeah.
And so you'll see it in the state of schools. State of schools in Eastern Cape is terrible. The state of schools in other parts of KwaZulu-Natal is terrible. State of schools in other parts of Limpopo is absolutely terrible.
Yeah.
And then you have like good schools in the Western Cape, good schools in Gauteng,
good schools in Free State.
So you then segregating this thing and giving coding and these excellent 4IR related subjects to kids in good schools. Well, that's what we were saying.
Yeah.
Whereas what happens to the kids in rural areas whose schools don't even have toilets?
No, you understand,
they get left behind even further by the kids in better schools?
You see?
No, guys, my argument is that those who can do it, they must.
But
it's currently happening now. That is the problem.
It's currently happening now. It will further highlight the areas that need priority and intervention from the national government.
But
remember, they have this now rollout or this mass school build project. Where they are launching schools left, right, and center in rural areas. So even those schools that are in rural areas, in mind, when they build them, they will build them to say, look, it's a disadvantaged area. They didn't have a school before. But because we have taken this stance as government that we are introducing, even them, we will give them smart boards, we will give them iPads, if that be the case, or laptops and ensure that there is a teacher that can take them through. I mean, I think that's fair.
Yeah. Well, I hear you, Apu, but in the interest of time, maybe, gentlemen, Kaifas, what was your big takeout in a minute? What was your takeout from the actual sauna by President Cyril Ramaphosa?
I took out nothing, really.
You and I. You and I. You know.
Yeah.
That's why I was looking at you and Vumvu when you were saying the disruption. Prevented us from hearing what the the disruptions happened, then the speech came out.
The speech did come. Yeah. It was very empty,
yeah.
And it was very disappointing. Again, this is a president who, for me, really, I don't know if he actually knows what he wants to do. He actually, you know, has got a wide a focus on actually what it is that he wants to achieve. He keeps on saying all of these things that amount, and when you put them together and you're like, but he said nothing. At the end of the day, he said absolutely nothing except for the Eskom thing, you know, except for the power generation thing. I heard nothing.
Perhaps the question now should, well, after Kaifas's comments should be changed. What is your view on President Cyril Ramaphosa and his non-decision or lack of backbone, if I may put it that way? That is my view, that he doesn't have a backbone. He tries to please everyone. He tries to play into the factions of the ANC and try to please both or all of them, because there could be more now, at all material times. I mean, can he survive with this? Can he serve the country to the best of his ability if he continues in that manner, Apio?
No. I agree with the both of you. In fact, what you were saying, Kaifas and you, Mvumvu, is that there are a lot of things that he talks about. And if you trace them, you will, each announcement, even when you talk about the creation or the building of a new university in Ekurhuleni, you find that it's things that are from different sectors. And then you can't find Cyril Ramaphosa, the man, on the speech that, this is my vision.
Yeah.
Yes, I agree. I'm leading with a collective, but this is my vision. It's unlike what you used to get from Thabo Mbeki.
Which really, you know, was his own.
You know, last 10 seconds, if I may, we're going into a very serious budget next week. Tito Mboweni has to tell us, you know, where our economy is, and it's depressed. We are sitting with an economy that is not growing, massive joblessness, people have lost hope of even finding jobs, ratings downgrade is around the corner. We have a huge national debt. Huge fiscal deficit, and all of those things, and you have a president who speaks like we're not facing all of those problems.
Yeah.
You'll hear next week when Tito speaks, it's going to be all depressing.
You know, I get that you maybe have announced your plans, maybe the previous sauna and not this one.
Yeah.
But even his analysis, or rather his when he goes back to the previous year, he doesn't give us something solid that, okay, these are our main challenges. Maybe he doesn't know how to fix them, but at least it must give you a picture of a man who knows what is going on. This is the state we find ourselves in, whether it's positive or it's negative. You're not getting that from the speech. I don't understand.
Let's move on to more dramatic stuff. Perhaps now Apio would have more views on these particular issues. Now, the following day after the president's speech, there was a lot of drama. The drama didn't end on the day of Sona. It continued the following day, especially the chaps from Bramfontein, Economic Freedom Fighters, the CIC was back at it again. This time around, really, he went on and on and on. Let's just listen to him. But even to that, there was a response by a younger person in the ANC, in the true sense of young people, Minister Ronald Lamuda. Let's listen to those and then we'll talk more about it.
Honorable Malemba has just made a very dangerous statement here. He referred to people as fools. I think it is unparliamentary, and Comrade Malema must withdraw that statement.
Is it unparliamentary to say you are a fool? It can't be, Chair.
No, man.
It can't be, Chair. I'm telling you.
Point of order, Chair.
You can check your stuff there.
Speaker, on a point of order.
If you are not clever, you're not clever. There's nothing
no,
I can do.
No, on a point of order.
Let's keep it for 1 hour so I can be on this platform for 1 hour. Let's go on.
Can you request the fool in the podium to sit down when order is called on to him?
Thank you very much, Chair. Please proceed, Honorable Malima.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'm happy that you are continuing to learn from me. I just taught you that telling each other fools is not a problem, and you did exactly that. You learn after me.
House
you follow me, because I'm
House
in charge. I'm running this thing. So
House
don't
chair.
Worry.
Please proceed your speech.
This is my speech. You can run my minutes. It's my speech.
Please proceed.
I'm standing here so I can irritate you. You can be emotional anyhow you want. There is nothing you can do. I'm in charge. So I'm running this house, you see. So you can get angry and stand up and sit down.
House chair.
Honorable member, Malima, we are not running the house. Please proceed house with the speech.
It is your own house as a ruling party. If you want to collapse your own house, it's your own house. You can collapse it. So there is nothing I can do to help you. Just continue to learn from me.
Lamula fired back. Let's hear him.
Yesterday, we witnessed firsthand what Honorable Mtembu correctly describes as misguided delusion of grandeur. Honorable Mhlaule, extend this further by defining the tendency as fascist. What we saw were the EFF members and ultimately voters are subjected to. Honorable Malema stood here and held a spectacular monologue with full view of South Africans. In his monologue, he seems to think that he's in charge and that the world revolves around him. This is just a figment of his imagination, of his militarized world. You cannot be in charge in a democracy. The people are in charge.
Yeah, ne? On Twitter, they would say, shots fired. Anyway, Kaifas, is Mr. Julius Malema running the show, or is it a cult? What's your view?
Well, if he's running the show, it's because they're allowing him to run the show.
Yeah.
Lamola's very wise, very, very matured, very, very insightful intervention actually saved the day for the ANC.
Yeah.
He came in as Julius Malema's contemporary.
Yeah.
As somebody who has served under Julius.
Yeah.
Somebody who knows Julius and Julius's tendencies. And he summarized Julius very, very well and saved the day after that blunder with that boy mama bullet person and that non-strategy. Lamola saved the day.
Yeah. Abiwe, what's your view?
That caucus of the ANC in the National Assembly is a mess.
Yeah.
It seems as if it's leaderless. They don't know what to do with Julius Malema. He always outplays them. They go there with, you know, there's nothing EFF can offer you in this period and in parliament. They know that.
Yeah.
So what they do is they make so much noise that whatever you take out of the sitting is not what is being presented by the ANC, which is the ruling party. They've mastered the strategy from 2014 when they started. From 2014 when they started up until now, except for the last two sonas, where you could actually get to know, okay, this is what was being presented as plans and so on. They know how to play that game of parliament. Poema Mabolo, you. Let's say about that one better. That was chaos. Eh? And it ended up putting the president of the ANC on the spot.
Spotlight,
over a matter that he didn't have to raise. Poema Mabolo. If I was Tumamina, I would be furious.
Yeah.
Why did they let him speak? First of all, they know these two have a beef. So they are playing out their limbombo beef, their neighborly beef in parliament.
Mm. Also, is it correct to say that the EFF has completely subdued the DA's official opposition in parliament?
You see the chief whip of the DA.
Yes.
From last week up until now, she was speaking as if she's the chief whip of the ANC. And maybe I'm being too harsh on the chief whip of the ANC to say maybe they are leaderless. What do you need to do when the biggest opposition is standing up and defending you and your president? Nothing.
And also, this subduedness of the DA by the EFF, could it well be that indeed, I mean, these days, to agree with you, Abiy, it's quite difficult to tell the difference between the ANC and the DA when you listen to how they speak, when you listen to the policies that they're advocating for, when you listen to DA leaders speak in parliament these days. In fact, now ANC President Cyril Ramaphosa is defended more on the DA benches than the ANC benches, if the likes of Poema Mabolo are not messing it up. Is that a correct analysis? Do you agree with that perhaps the suffering of the DA is because there's no longer a distinction between them and the ANC, while the EFF is completely on its own and distinct on the other side.
I don't know. The DA has gone through its own problems. They're well documented. What I find right now is that it because of their own, they respect the president.
Yeah.
Right. Unlike Zuma, they respect Cyril, and they still think people who are still in the who are in the DA are hopeful and think that Cyril agrees with most of their policies.
Yeah.
And that in a way Cyril will be able to defeat those in the ANC that, you know, are on the other extreme end, your RET forces.
Yeah.
So they tread very carefully when it comes to Cyril. But where APU is correct is where you have the ANC as the governing party that has a president who is under fire, is getting attacked. They as a party under fire, getting attacked left, right, and center by the EFF.
Yeah.
And it takes a DA chief whip to actually defend them. That should be a serious case of concern for the ANC about the nature of their leadership in parliament, about the astuteness of their leadership in parliament. I mean, in caucus,
yes.
Not in parliament, not the speaker. I'm talking about in caucus.
Yeah.
So their whippery, that the ANC needs to seriously relook at the leadership they have in caucus, and whether that leadership actually understands what it is like, you know, understand their role, because their role is not just to lead the ANC in parliament, it's to lead that entire institution politically and provide political leadership. Are they the correct people to provide the political leadership in parliament? I don't think so.
Beautiful.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
100%. Well, anyway, that's all we have time for, gentlemen. Thank you so much for today. We meet again here next week. We must actually appeal and convince Kaifas to, in fact, he must make a commitment now that he's coming back next. I'm sure our listeners are going to enjoy the kind of political economy analysis that they got today.
Yeah.
He must commit. Mr. Kaifas, can you commit that you will be back with us next week, sir? Please.
Well, being put on the spot like this.
Thank you, he's committed. We are. Yeah, chance. No, thanks so much. Anyway, please remember to subscribe to our podcast for free on Iona.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and all other platforms where you get your podcasts. By subscribing, you will automatically be notified each time a new podcast is released. If you like our podcast or want to engage with us, chat with us on Twitter and Facebook on hashtag ST Politics Weekly. And rate us on your favorite podcast app. Until next time, I am Zengisa Mvuvu. Bye-bye.